All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is May 1st, 2026, and me without my Justin Timberlake memes. Well, the top story this morning, it's Friday. That means we jawbone oil. We have our wars on the weekends, and then by Monday, we have our peace offerings or our ceasefire arrangements, rinse, repeat week after week. Today is no different. The price of oil dropped just a few moments ago when news broke that the latest Iranian proposal was passed via secret note to mediators in Pakistan. No words on the details, no words of any American response, but keep in mind this is against a backdrop of the United States had broken the news or leaked the news that they were preparing for another round of military strikes on Iran and also preparing for the blockade to go on indefinitely. Now, as all of this is happening, it's important to note the Iranian currency, the rial. News broke yesterday or the day before, within the last 24 hours or so, that it had fallen to 1.8 million to the dollar. It is a worthless currency. And that's very important because, you know, while the world struggles with higher fuel prices and consumers are taking the hit, the opposite side of this war of economic attrition is the Iranian currency. It fell to a record low of 1.8 million. Now, the context of that 1.8 million, the Iranian currency fell to a prior record low of about 1.5 million to the dollar back in January after the failure of the third largest bank in Iran. The Iranian bank failed, most likely the result of years of economic sanctions, and that bank's failure resulted in the Iranian currency plummeting to a record low of 1.5 million to the dollar. That plunge in the Iranian currency is largely considered to be what triggered the nationwide protests and riots that led to the slaughter of tens of thousands of people in Iran. It's to this day, the internet is still shut down in Iran because of all those nationwide protests that were bordering on uprising. And it's largely believed to be that uprising and the Iranian response to the uprising that precipitated the U.S. bombing of Iran, which was, of course, encouraged by the success of the Maduro raids, and of course, ongoing disputes over the Iranian nuclear program. Oh my God, there's so many moving pieces to this story. But it's important to note that the Iranian currency has continued to plummet. The blockade is having a severe economic impact. Is that making the Iranians more willing to talk? We don't know. We don't know what was in this latest note that they passed. They're very cute. They pass notes like in class, you know, Timmy likes Lori. Do you want to go out on a date? Whatever. That's how we handle our war negotiations now. Now, as that's going on, as the Iranian war is collapsing, it's also important to keep in mind that U.S. gas prices have risen substantially in just the last week. Now, we all noticed gas prices went up in the initial bout of the war. Oil prices went up. Gas stations react right away. But in the last week, it has taken on a new dimension. It's gotten even more severe. In some states, gas prices are up 70 to 85 cents a gallon. That's being driven by gasoline exports. We have a limited refining capacity in this country, and our oil exports are way up, and our exports of refined gasoline and diesel are also way up. The United States is, while causing this spike in oil prices and fuel prices by the start of the war, we are also subsidizing lower prices by dumping the SPR and by sending more exports abroad, which is driving up prices domestically here. We've also got a whole bunch of stories about various forms of price controls going on across the world here. So again, this war of economic attrition, it's continuing with pain felt on both sides. The propaganda is in full effect. America, great, Satan, Iran, state sponsor of terrorism, of course, but they're a paper tiger. All this back and forth. Look, this is hurting everybody. Now, we've got a significant yet very quiet development happened in the UAE that we're going to have to talk about as well. A lot going on in the UAE over the last few weeks. And I think when you look at these things in aggregate, you can see a geopolitical realignment happening in the Gulf here. We've also got the Japanese currency. We got confirmation that the Japan Finance Ministry intervened in the yen market yesterday. $34.5 billion worth of yen intervention is what happened. Now, that compares with $24 billion was the size of the interventions back in 2024. They did $24 billion four times back in 2024, which ultimately culminated in the yen carry trade crisis of August 2024 that led to massive sell-off in U.S. equities that was very brief and the stocks rebounded quickly. So we've only had one intervention now, $34.5 billion. It was a lot bigger than the four interventions were in 2024. Are we going to have four interventions this time around? The Japanese government is, they're being coy about it, but they're saying, yo, we're ready to rock it any second now. We've got holidays coming up in Japan, and they're like, don't put your phone down. They specifically said, don't look away from your smartphone, meaning we're ready to do this again. Also interesting, they didn't rule out intervening in the oil futures market. Oh, that's significant. There's been a lot of people speculating that the U.S. Treasury has been manipulating oil futures since this war began. Now we've got Japan saying we're not going to rule out manipulating oil futures, while they're also saying we're in close contact with the U.S. Treasury on currency intervention. So do we, I mean, this is, I don't think we need this. We haven't put on the tinfoil hat in a while, but it sure looks like the governments are playing games with the oil futures in order to minimize the economic impact of the war. Would you put it past them? It's the 2020s. No. Sucks to be an oil long when you're basically trading against the United States government. All right. So we've got all that going on. We've also got earnings from Exxon and Chevron. Earnings were pretty good. Prices went up and the increase in oil prices offset the losses from capacity losses. So we've got beats from Exxon and Chevron this morning in their earnings. Both companies reported big losses in derivatives. I'm guessing that is hedges blowing up. These companies tend to hedge their exposure to the prices in the futures market. So when you get a big move up in oil prices, yeah, they make more money, but the shorts that they put on to hedge their exposure, those lose money. That should work itself out in a couple of months. Apple is up on earnings this morning as well. Revenue guidance was great. The revenue they reported was up 17% year over year. iPhone sales up 22% year over year. But Apple not ruling out price hikes due to the memory shortage. Investors like the sound of that. That stock is up this morning as well. Meta took out another $25 billion in debt. Keep in mind, they've already incinerated all their free cash flow, which is immense because Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp makes money hand over fist. They're spending all of that on GPUs. In October, they borrowed another $30 billion, and now they're back in April borrowing another $25 billion, all to sacrifice at the altar of artificial intelligence that will someday make them money. Trust me, bro. At least that's what the company says. Estee Lauder is laying off more people than previously announced. 10,000 is the number of layoffs at Estee Lauder. It was previously announced at 7,000. You can add another 3K to that. That stock is ripping. Uh-oh, the stock market loves a layoff. That is not a good sign for the average working person. I think you're going to see a lot of headlines like this. The weak job market just got a little bit weaker. Interesting story. First Brands creditors who have taken over the company since the fraud-induced bankruptcy at First Brands, they're suing the auditor, BDO, saying that they were basically negligent. And that, the interesting, First Brands chose BDO because they're notoriously lax in reinforcing auditing standards. And, well, that's important because there's one company in particular that BDO has played a very big role in the last few years, a company I like to talk about. Some of you guys probably know the one we're getting at, but we'll talk about that as well. And last but not least, we got a story about how Thoma Bravo, the private equity fund, will not be reinjecting more cash into software firm Medallia. And you're like, okay, who and who? This is important because Thoma Bravo owns Medallia, and Medallia is one of the biggest holdings in many of these private credit funds that have recently been taking losses in that debt and have been gating redemptions because people want their money out of these funds because of companies like Medallia. And this means that Medallia is probably going to go bankrupt, probably going to hand the keys over to the lenders. And the lenders are those private credit funds that aren't giving people their money back. Funds managed by Blackstone, Apollo, KKR, Antares, and HPS Partners, BlackRock, are all on the list of companies that are probably looking at even bigger losses in private credit because of this one. And, you know, guys, the private credit story's kind of fallen by the wayside because we're in the middle of the quarter and we get all the stories about gating redemptions typically at the end of the quarter. But if this Medallia story is any indicator, it means within another month or two, we're going to start hearing even more tales of more people wanting their money back and being told no by these private credit funds, even as the government rolls out the red carpet to park this crap in your retirement account. I kid you not. Guys, we got a lot going on this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back on Monday and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 24 points, or about a third of a percent. You may notice the big green shoot here. That was at 8:10 a.m. Eastern time. That is when the story of the illustrious note being passed by the Iranians to the Pakistanis heading to the United States about, hey, let's talk. We don't know what was in that note, but you can see stocks liked it. The Dow is up 201 points or 0.4%. Again, big green candle up on the news of the Iranian note. It sold off and now we're just grinding back higher again. And the NASDAQ is also higher today by 24 points or 0.09%. The U.S. dollar is weaker, 0.2% lower, or 20 basis points back below 98 to 97.9. You will notice this big red candle here in the DXY. That was when the story broke of the Japanese confirming the intervention, or not confirming, but other people looked at the data in the Forex market and said, we can tell the Japanese spent this many billions. It was $34.5 billion intervening in the market. When that story broke, you could see the dollar took a big dive. The yen strengthened abruptly. We'll get to more of that here. Let's talk about what happened. Yen resumes rally sparked by first intervention in 2 years. The yen resumed its advance in late trading in Tokyo after an earlier pause in the rally triggered by Japan's first intervention in the currency market since 2024. And again, guys, that 2024 intervention, it caused calamity in U.S. stocks in the summer of 2024, which I'm sure a lot of you guys remember. Everybody was like, Godzilla, the yen carry trade unwinding. It went away, but the problem never went away. People just stopped freaking out over it. The Japanese currency strengthened as much as 0.7% to 155.5 to the dollar, passing the level reached in Thursday's surge. While the nation's top currency official has declined to confirm the intervention, a person familiar with the matter said authorities had entered the market. Economic officials in the U.S. were notified ahead of the move. That's important. They're coordinating this with either the Fed or the Treasury or both. Without additional intervention, the yen's intervention-fueled rally is in danger of evaporating, according to traders, who see an increasing likelihood that Japan will have to step into the market again to shore up the exchange rate. An erosion of initial gains in the yen would follow the pattern seen around this time in 2024, when Japan came into the market on several occasions to address the weakness. Now, back in 2024, they spent $24 billion four times. This time, they've done $34.5 billion once. So a bigger intervention one time. We'll see if subsequent interventions are even bigger. And by the way, when you rig markets, you have the amount of money required to rig markets does get progressively bigger and bigger and bigger. This is what happens when you try to interfere with the free market. You have to do it more and more. It's very much like a narcotic. Atsushi Mimura, Vice Finance Minister for International Affairs, offered a veiled warning of this to traders on Friday ahead of the May 4th to 6th Golden Week break in Japan. I will not comment on future developments, but I will point out that we are just at the beginning of a very long holiday period, Mimura said. We are in extremely close contact with the U.S., and I believe we share our assessment of the situation and our actions. Mimura extended his warning to energy traders, adding that generally speaking, we are always ready to act regarding crude oil futures transactions. So not only are they rigging Forex markets, they're saying, hey, we might go ahead and just rig oil markets. And by the way, we're coordinating this with the United States government, who many people are speculating are currently rigging oil markets. So, you know, I saw an interview with Jem Kirsten yesterday, who basically said we are in a managed market. Which means you can't expect the market to react how you would expect a free market to react, because everything is rigged. I don't know what to tell you guys. Just be careful trading. If you're betting on oil prices going higher, I understand the reasoning you're using for the higher oil prices, the Strait of Hormuz and everything, but understand you're betting against the United States government, who has an infinite supply of money that could be printed or borrowed. That's who's on the other side of the trade. Is that really where you want to be? I mean, I would agree with you. Oil's probably heading higher here, but, and that is a big but, the government is on the other side of the trade. So here's what the yen did. All right. These are 1 minute candles. This was the big intervention yesterday that we saw. And then again, 2:45 a.m. Eastern time today, we got another drop on those comments from the finance minister, who basically said we could be looking at another one of these over this holiday weekend. So that's why you're looking at a weaker dollar this morning, because of what happened with the yen. Looking over at Bitcoin real quick, 78,278. Bitcoin is higher by about $2,000 here. The weaker dollar may be contributing to that. Bitcoin has been defying logic, defying the traditional crypto winter behavior, largely because of Stretch, which is Michael Saylor's latest version of the infinite money glitch. And infinite money glitches always work right up until they don't. Ask the GameStop, the AMC, the Avis car people how infinite money glitches work. Yeah, they do. They work really well for a few people. And then the ones who chase get wiped out. Looking over at the bond market, the 30-year yield is lower by one basis point, 4.976% this morning. The 10-year is off by a fraction of 1 point at 4.389%. The 2 years at 3.892, that's actually higher by almost 1 point. And the 1 month is higher by two basis points at 3.666. Looking over at commodities, we've got spot gold is lower again, 45.91, below 4,600. Gold's now sold off a few hundred bucks over these last few days as oil prices have been moving higher. 0.64% lower for spot gold. It's my favorite of the shinies, though. Silver is looking all right this morning. 74.74, higher by almost a buck, or 1.33% higher. I like the shiny. Copper is lower by a couple of some fraction of a cent here. Platinum is 0.5% higher. Palladium also 0.5% higher. And WTI crude down by about 2.25%, $102.70 here. We'll look at that chart in just a minute, but this is the news. This is from Open Source Intel on Twitter. Just in, Iran sent its latest proposal for negotiations with the U.S. to Pakistani mediators on Thursday, according to Iranian state media. All right, so Iranian state media saying we sent a note. They're not giving any other details. That's as of 9:21 a.m. Eastern time. I don't know if more details will come out by the time you read this, but hey, they're talking. I guess that's a good thing. The last proposal the Iranians sent was basically rejected outright because they said, open up the strait. We'll open the strait. You open the strait. We want guarantees. You won't bomb us forever. And then eventually we'll talk about the whole nuclear thing. And of course, the Trump administration dismissed that out of hand. We'll see if this proposal is any different. But you can see the reaction in oil markets right now. Oil's lower, 102.76. These are daily candles. Let's look at the minute candles. It was about 2 a.m. Eastern time. Or, I'm sorry, 8:10 a.m. Eastern time is when that message came out. And that is, here, let's see here. That's right about, where are we? Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It'll be 9:10 Eastern time. Anyways, don't worry so much about the minute candles. I think this is the hours are messed up here. Oil prices, a little bit lower this morning. All right, but gasoline prices are not lower. This is from at GasBuddyGuy on Twitter, Patrick DeHaan. He tracks gasoline prices nationwide very closely. Every single state has higher gas prices today compared to a week ago. We've got some pretty big jumps up here. Indiana up 84 cents a gallon in the last week. Michigan 72 cents a gallon. Ohio 60 cents a gallon. Big yet smaller increases in Illinois and New Mexico, just under 40 cents a gallon in those two states. Nationwide, gasoline prices up big in just the last few days. And again, oil prices, yeah, they're higher in the last few days, but I think gasoline exports are really driving this. Again, the United States is exporting about, if you count crude oil and refined products, about 14 million barrels per day is being exported. Was that by the week? Don't quote me on the time unit there, but it was about 14 million barrels were exported. And, you know, that's a pretty big one. Was it per week or per day? But the U.S. has historically been the biggest exporter of refined gasoline. Most of that goes to Mexico, but I think a lot of that is now going to Europe. And we've got a lot of stories about various forms of price controls around the world here. Indian oil hikes prices of industrial LPG and jet fuel, but for only foreign airlines. Now, this is kind of interesting. As we're subsidizing lower prices for other countries are like, yeah, we're going to be protectionist for our airlines, but anybody else wanting to refuel at our airports, you're going to have to pay more. Kind of grinds my teeth a little bit there. India's largest state-run refiner, Indian Oil Corporation, has raised the prices of liquefied petroleum gas used by industries and jet fuel for foreign airlines on Friday, the company said in a statement. Let's see. We're looking at a 47.8% hike in the price of LPG cylinders for industrial clients. All right, so what are they doing there? The industries that use this LPG, they have to pay a lot more because they're trying to keep the prices for households lower. This is price controls, economic populism, trying to soften the blow on the average person while at the same time raking the industry over the coals, which is who the average person works for. So it'll work for a short time and a short time only. Meanwhile, aviation turbine fuel prices for international airlines were raised by $76.55 per kiloliter. That's an obscure unit there. To $1,511 per kiloliter, up from $1,435. But that's only for foreign airlines. Domestic airlines won't be paying this. Prices for household LPG, primarily used for cooking fuel, were left unchanged, and jet fuel prices for domestic airlines were also not revised. All right, so the industrials and the foreign airlines got to pay higher fuel prices for the benefit of Indian households and domestic airlines. And that's just the form of price controls that's going on here. We've also got price controls in France here. Total Energies to extend fuel price cap in France during Middle East crisis. Now, this is kind of interesting because this isn't like a state-induced price cap. This is a private company capping fuel prices. Maybe they're trying to gain market share here. Total Energies said on Thursday it would maintain its policy of capping fuel prices across France for as long as the crisis in the Middle East continues, and announced a temporary nationwide fixed price offer for key public holiday weekends in May. The French energy giant said it would keep the price caps it had announced in March at its 3,300 service stations in mainland France as oil prices continue to rise. Under the policy, gasoline is capped at 1.99 euros per liter and diesel at 2.25 euros per liter throughout May. And by the way, before you're like, oh yeah, the prices are so much lower in Europe, 1.99 euros per liter is just a hair shy of $9 a gallon if you would adjust for currency exchanges and liters to a gallon. So yeah, they've got price caps, but the price caps are ridiculously high. If you think the prices are bad in California, try France. All right, now we got to talk about this one. Guys, there's been a lot of news about the UAE recently. This is pretty substantial here. Israel and the UAE forge major defense cooperation amid Iran war report. Jerusalem deployed the Iron Beam laser, a spectro drone detection system, and an Iron Dome to Abu Dhabi as Iran fired 2,500 projectiles at the Gulf state, according to the Financial Times report. Take a minute to realize how significant this is and what the UAE has done over the last several weeks. All right, you had the UAE. First, they asked for a swap line from the U.S. Treasury, and they got it. Then you had the UAE announce they're leaving OPEC. You also had the UAE hand over Daniel Kinahan, or they arrested Daniel Kinahan, and they're currently negotiating extradition to Ireland. That is one of the world's most wanted criminals, an international drug cartel leader, and a financier of terrorism who was living a flamboyant lifestyle out in the open being sheltered by the UAE. Well, now they're turning him over. Well, Iranian drones landing on your head are funny like that. And all of those things combined, now you've got the UAE, an Arab Muslim country, forging a defense cooperation with Israel. All right, look, there obviously, anytime you mention Israel or you mention terrorism in the Middle East, you get some very passionate responses. Turn all that emotion off for a minute and understand the significance of this. Historically, nobody would even be willing to be in the same room as the Israelis. Now you've got a defense pact, major geopolitical shift going on in the Middle East with these Gulf Coast countries right now. I don't know what this looks like next year or 10 years from now, but this is a big step in a pro-Western direction from the UAE, who has always kind of walked that line between both sides of the fence, harboring, being a safe harbor for criminals and money launderers all over the world. I mean, this is very significant here, what's happened in the last few days. And this is just another one on top of that, on top of leaving OPEC. Now they're getting friendly with the Israelis. These are things that were unheard of just a few years ago. All right, we also got earnings announcements from the oil majors. Exxon profit surprises analysts despite Iran war's tumult. Okay, we're going to go kind of quick through this because you had pretty much the same headline with Chevron. Upstream strength lifts first quarter earnings past estimate. Both companies reported better than expected earnings, where losses from production being shut down were more than offset by higher oil prices. There's one thing I did want to zero in on a little bit with Exxon. I want to zero in on here. Roughly 15% of Exxon's worldwide output remains offline. All right. So Exxon has 15% exposure of their total output to the Middle East because of the Strait of Hormuz. With Chevron, it's slightly lower. I had it highlighted. Yes. Middle East turmoil remains limited, accounting for less than 5% of its total production. So both companies reported good earnings. Both stocks are up a little bit. I'll show you the charts in a second. But Exxon is more exposed to the Middle East than Chevron, 15% versus 5%. Exxon stock is lower now. It was up a fraction of a percent earlier. Now it's down by 1.42%, or about $2.20. Chevron stock was also higher just moments ago, now down by 1.25%. I'm guessing it was the news of the note being passed to the Pakistanis that lowered oil prices that probably caused those pre-market gains to evaporate. Now the both majors are trading just based on oil futures. All right, we also got earnings from Apple after the bell yesterday, and they were good. Apple revenue and guidance tops estimates on booming iPhone and Mac demand. Apple issued better than expected revenue forecast for the current period after beating on sales and earnings in the fiscal second quarter. The stock rose about 3% in extended trading. Sales for iPhones missed estimates for the second time in three quarters, the only significant number that came up short of expectations on Thursday. All right, yeah, they missed estimates, but they were up significantly year over year. So those estimates were pretty ambitious. We're going to skip over some of these numbers here. Revenue up 17% from $95.4 billion a year earlier. It was the first time the company faced Wall Street since the announcement that Tim Cook would be stepping down as CEO after 15 years on the job. Apple said on the earnings call that revenue in the June quarter will increase 14 to 17% from a year earlier. Market liked that guidance. Analysts were expecting 9.5% growth. The company's board authorized an additional $100 billion in stock buybacks and declared a dividend of 27 cents per share, up 4%. More money being returned to investors. The market liked that. Sales of iPhones rose 22% in the quarter from a year earlier. Again, they're saying iPhone sales missed estimates, but they were up 22% year over year. Those are some pretty high estimates. Like other consumer electronics companies and device makers, Apple faces supply chain constraints, largely due to the global memory shortage that's being driven by soaring artificial intelligence demand. Now, Tim Cook was kind of coy on the earnings call about whether they were going to raise prices. Of course, they're going to raise prices because of those memory price hikes. They just didn't want to say it, probably because it doesn't poll so well in focus groups. But the market liked it anyway. Apple stock up 4% ahead of the opening bell now, $282.41 a share for Apple. Meanwhile, the cash burn at Meta continues to get worse, and it is increasingly being fueled by debt. Again, when the dust settles from this AI bubble, we're going to look back and just shake our heads at these headlines, as people should be shaking their heads at these headlines today, but they're not for whatever reason, because they just have AI-colored glasses on. Meta sells $25 billion of debt as investor worry and fatigue builds. Meta Platform sold $25 billion of investment-grade bonds, hitting the market with a jumbo deal for the second time in 6 months as investors are starting to show some signs of fatigue. Nearly all of the six portions of the bond sale were priced at higher risk premiums than Meta's October sale, signaling the investors are demanding more compensation to buy debt from the parent of Facebook. There are other signs of growing concern with Meta's outlook too, as investors worry that the company's investments in AI won't pay off. It's probably because they're not paying off. Shares fell the most in 6 months, a day after the company released quarterly results and boosted its expected capital expenditures. Cost to protect the company's debt against default using derivatives hit a fresh record high on Thursday. Jeez, credit default swaps from Facebook? Apparently those are now a thing. guys, the cash burn, it's not stopping. They're going into debt. They're exhausting their free cash flow, and they just keep doing it, even though investors are now punishing the stocks several quarters in a row for this. At some point, something's got to give here. And in further bad news for the job market, we've got Estee Lauder to cut 3,000 more jobs as CEO pushes overhaul. The big deal here, the job cuts, they hurt. They're bigger than expected, but it's the reaction of the stock that should worry people here. Estee Lauder plans to cut as many as 3,000 more jobs and generate a further $200 million of savings to help boost its turnaround plan. The owner of the La Mer and Ordinary brands said Friday as many as 10,000 roles will now go, up from its previous target of 7,000 announced a year ago. Estee Lauder has a global workforce of about 57,000, according to its website. So what, that's like 15 to 20% of the company they're letting go? The CEO who took over in January is trying to overhaul the conglomerate after 3 years of annual sales drops. That's significant too. Apparently there is this secular trend. A lot less makeup is being used. Women are just using less cosmetics than they did years ago, 3 consecutive years. Typically cosmetics holds up pretty well during times of consumer distress because it's one of those guilty pleasures. I can't afford a vacation, so I'll buy more lipstick, has been like the traditional relationship between recessions and cosmetics. I don't think that's going to hold up this time around because you just have this trend for the first time in my lifetime of people are just using less of it. But the big reaction here that you got to worry about is the fact that the stock was ripping on this news. Now, the stock is selling off here all of a sudden at the opening bell, but this stock was up over 11% at one point this morning. You can see the big green candle. The market liked the layoffs. And the fact that the market likes the layoffs means more companies are going to look at that and say, gee, we should lay people off too, which means the job market's probably not going to be improving. And the job market is already frozen, much like the housing market. Not a good sign. Now on to private credit. First Brands creditor sues auditor BDO over missed red flags. Crooks who know trust BDO. That's how it goes here. A lender that owns First Brands Corp debt sued auditor BDO, alleging it failed to detect problems at the auto parts supplier before it collapsed into bankruptcy, and federal prosecutors accused founder Patrick James of fraud. It looks like BDO is the front runner for Arthur Andersen this time. Funds managed by Black Diamond Capital Management said in an April 29th lawsuit that BDO's audits did not comply with generally accepted auditing standards because they missed numerous risk factors, including First Brand's extensive use of factoring and hundreds of millions of dollars in transfers to James' personal trust. How does an auditor not flag hundreds of millions of dollars being transferred from a company to the CEO's personal trust? The Black Diamond affiliate said they relied on BDO's audits when it bought about $70 million of First Brand senior debt, which is now worthless. It now expects a loss in bankruptcy. Like other creditors, James denied wrongdoing and pleaded not guilty to criminal charges. The lawsuit accuses BDO of neglect, negligent misrepresentation, fraudulent misrepresentation, and tortious interference with contract. It seeks damages equal to the principal and interest of the outstanding debt the Black Diamond funds own, Financial Times reported earlier. BDO is basically saying they lied to us. How were we supposed to know? How were we supposed to go out and verify the numbers? Well, you're the auditor. That's kind of what you're supposed to do, is to make sure the company's not lying in their books. Isn't that how that works? The lawsuit followed an April 27th report by a bankruptcy examiner. In the report, lawyer Martin DeLuca cited a former executive who said the company switched audit firms because BDO was viewed as less rigorous and had an unsophisticated process that let the business do what we want with these guys. That's pretty substantial here, this report by a bankruptcy examiner who says the executives are saying we picked BDO on purpose because they let us get away with anything. DeLuca said witnesses reported that BDO did not directly access underlying enterprise systems such as Oracle or consistently perform independent verification of other information. But he also said his investigation is incomplete and that more work is needed to determine whether First Brand's auditors complied with generally accepted auditing standards. Why is this important? This is important because BDO is the same auditor that was hired by Super Microcomputer back in 2025 after their auditor quit because of accounting fraud, their second accounting fraud scandal in 6 years. And they hired BDO, and BDO comes in and says, sure, we'll sign off on the books. we'll just put an asterisk in here that says we have major concerns about internal controls. In other words, Supermicro bought a rubber stamp from BDO and BDO gave it to him. First Brands is now suing BDO for doing the same thing over there. And I would also mention this one from April of last year. Audit deficiency rate drops in 2024 in sign of improvement. Now, this is a like an auditing industry review that this group did. But look what they said about BDO. Where is it? BDO inspectors looked at 30 audits in 2024 and found 60% of them to be deficient. This nevertheless represents a significant improvement because it was 86% in 2023. It was 66% in 2022. So look at BDO's audits here. They have a 60% deficiency rate, and they're like, oh, this is much better than the 86% deficiency it was a year ago. And then you've got First Brands is saying, yeah, we chose BDO because they'll let us get away with anything. And that's the same company that signed off on Supermicro's books. Supermicro, who's currently their co-founder, is under indictment for violating export controls. That co-founder is the same guy that Supermicro fired back in 2022 during their previous accounting scandal. People who know trust BDO. And last but not least, a private credit warning. Thoma Bravo refuses to inject fresh cash into Medallia. Translation, the losses in private credit funds are about to get worse. Thoma Bravo won't inject any fresh capital into Medallia, the ailing software company that's become a visible example of the generous equity valuations and loose lending standards that prevailed during the pandemic era buyout boom. The creditors will probably take back the keys to the company, according to Orlando Braver, founder and managing partner of the private equity giant. We are not interested in putting more money into the company because we have to be disciplined about that, Bravo said at a Bloomberg event in Miami. We could do it, kick the can down the road another 5 years, pretend like it never happened, but we have a big fiduciary duty to our investors who are going to take a 100% loss on their equity stake in Medallia. So it's important to note here, guys, when private credit loses money, private equity loses everything. And what they're saying here is we're going to hand the keys to this company back to the people we borrowed money from to buy it because the company's not worth it's not worth it. A group of private creditors led by Blackstone had already refused to extend another lifeline to software company Medallia, Bloomberg previously reported. That had increased the pressure on Thoma Bravo to inject more equity into the troubled business or throw in the towel. It looks like they chose the towel. Thoma Bravo took Medallia private at a $6.4 billion valuation in 2021. The write-down in equity will result in a $5 billion hit for the firm and its co-investors. And I got that guy from, what was it, Rocky III, when Apollo was fighting Drago. Just throw the damn towel. Throw the towel in. Yeah, that's what they're doing here with Medallia. The private equity firm is saying, no more money for you. Private credit firms, you will now own the company. And then we've got firms Blackstone, Apollo, KKR, and Taurus, and HPS are going to end up owning this company that is not worth a fraction of the debt they loaned to them, which means the investors in those private credit funds will take even more losses when this inevitably happens. And when they take more losses, more of them are going to want their money back, which means the request for redemptions will get even higher at these private credit funds, and more of them will get redemptions. Again, right now we're in between quarter ends, so these private credit stories are falling by the wayside. They will come back in a big way in just a couple of weeks, and this story will be front and center when that happens. Big losses tied to Medallia. Well, guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget the like button and that subscribe button. And also, it's Friday, and that means 2 p.m. Eastern time. It's time for my weekly Q&A with my magnanimous Melon Heads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.